properly followed for these agreements and that county boards would need to give their approval. There's also some serious questions as to whether any of this is legal under Minnesota statute. And so both Itasca and Cass County sheriffs are saying that, they're not using these agreements and they're not going to use them anymore. And Cass County specifically, I mean, they had discussion about this at the county board, and they referred to this as null and void, this agreement. Crow Wing County also has one of these agreements, and they went further. They also agreed to the warrant service officer model, which means that a staff member of the Crow Wing County Sheriff's Office can issue an administrative warrant to someone if they are being detained in the jail for other reasons. According to Sheriff Klang, they have not used that. And 2 weeks ago, Sheriff Klang told me that they weren't using the other model either. Although with the caveat of if you've committed a crime in our county against our citizens, then we're gonna come find you, basically. So again, unclear if the folks who were detained at El Potro did commit crimes. We still don't know that information, and I need some additional confirmation before I'm willing to say one way or another.
Well, normally we would talk to you about the big story that came out of last weekend, but it has been chock full of news. And that was, you were also covering the vigil that was held at the jails. People can check that out at our website, but do you want to just give us a quick update on that as well?
Yeah, well, this was a vigil that had been planned for at least a week prior that was set to take place on Saturday outside the Crow Wing County Jail. People that felt they wanted to show solidarity with the folks in there, that they don't agree with Crow Wing County using their jail in this way. And then it just so happened to coincide with the shooting of Alex Pretti that morning. And so that was on a lot of people's minds and motivated probably even more people to come out there that day. Organizers estimated 300 people. I would, agree with that estimate. I was there, and there was people on both sides of the street, and it was like 10 below zero, felt like 22 below with the wind chill. And it was, I think, like we said earlier, people around here who are feeling the need to be involved in some way are looking for ways to do that in a rural place. And these little events are popping up everywhere. We've covered them in Grand Rapids. We've covered them in Bemidji. And I would expect that there's going to be more people coming forward about specifically about Crow Wing County's involvement. There's some organizing happening around there, plans to approach the county board and about this and kind of get what their stance is.
Thanks, Chelsea. You can find out what the news team is up to at our website, kaxe.org, along with our daily Up North report. Thanks for all the work, Chelsea.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Coming up, we will kind of continue this conversation about the Brainerd Lakes area. We're going to meet a pastor from the First Congregational United Church of Christ there, who was at the Minneapolis airport last Friday with other clergy from around the state, around the country, I believe, and also was part of 2 nights ago, the vigil in downtown Grand Rapids. Chelsea reports in
Brainerd.
that, in downtown Brainerd, reports, I'm thinking ahead, because there's also an El Potro restaurant in Brainerd, and it's the same owner between the two of them. Also, we didn't get to, but they have now shut the restaurant down in Brainerd. They have a note, handwritten note on the door thanking the customers. You can find all that info at kaxe.org.
You are listening to 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids and 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji. We are Northern Community Radio, telling the stories of the people and land of Northern Minnesota through music, news, conversation, and events. Operating translator K210DR in Brainerd at 89.9. Listen at kaxe.org or on your smart speaker. We need people like you to support this local media. Text the word donate to 218-326-1234.
Coming up at 9 o'clock, it is Headwaters with our very own Kari Headland.
We receive support from the Bonner Eye Clinic, introducing Dr. Abby Spur to their team at both locations in Grand Rapids and Hibbing. performing routine eye exams, assisting with post-op care after surgery, and more. BonnerEyeClinic.com. Let us help you see clearly.
Thanks also goes out to Ledger and Ladle, a restaurant in downtown Grand Rapids with a rotating menu every few months to explore a new region, technique, or ingredient. British food is right now, I believe. Open Wednesday through Friday, 3 to 9, Saturday 5 to 9, Sunday 10 to 2. More at ledgerandladle.com.
The Winter Lecture Series continues at the Forest History Center in Grand Rapids this Saturday at 1 o'clock. Historian Willa Hammett Brown will talk about the forces that built our communal memory of Northwoods Lumberjacks.
You're feeling nervous, aren't you, boy? With your quiet voice and impeccable style. Ever let them steal your joy and your gentle ways to keep them from running wild. They can kick dirt in your face, dress you down and tell you that your place is in the middle when they hate the way you shine. I see you tugging on your shirt, trying to hide inside of it and hide how much it hurts. Let them laugh while they can. Let them spin. Let them scatter in the wind. I have been to the movies. I have seen hands. And the joy. Discouraged, don't you, girl? It's your brother's world for a while longer. You gotta dance with the devil on a river to beat the stream. Call it living the dream. Call it kicking the ladder. They come to kick dirt in your face, to call you weak and then displace you after carrying your baby on your back across the desert. I saw your eyes behind your hair, and you're looking tired, but you don't look scared.
Brandi Carlile with The Joke. Would we call that a anthem or a song? What would we call that?
Both.
A balm at the moment.
Yeah, there we go. A salve there. We are here on People Powered Radio, KAXE. Thank you for bringing us with you this morning, where we receive support from Coldwell Banker Northwoods Realty, helping guide your real estate journey in northern Minnesota since 1947. From buying or selling to land or lakeshore, Coldwell Banker Northwoods Realty. More at coldwellbankernorthwoods.com.
It is 8:10. Thank you for being here. As the world watches the news from the state of Minnesota, we at KXE are also continuing to bring you stories of Minneapolis, the surge of ICE, and two killings on the city streets through our partnerships with National Public Radio and Minnesota Reformer and MinnPost. And we are covering what's happening in northern Minnesota. Joining us now is the Reverend Leslie Moody of the First Congregational Church of Christ in Brainerd. Leslie, thank you so much for being with us today. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Just small correction. It's First Congregational United Church of Christ.
Thank you.
There's a very big difference between Church of Christ and United Church of Christ.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
So, yeah, don't want to get those two confused.
Gotcha. Thank you so much for that. Well,
no problem.
I almost want to just say to you, like, where do we begin? Do we start last Friday?
I mean, I think it might be helpful to frame kind of, I think a timeline might be good, just in giving folks an understanding of maybe why I'm speaking to you, why you're inviting me here.
Yeah.
I received an email or a post. It happened so quickly, I don't even remember where it came from. But I saw a national call to faith leaders from an organization called MARCH, M-A-R-C-H, which stands for Multi-Faith, Anti-Racism, Change and Healing. And it is a group of multiracial clergy and faith leaders across traditions that is based in Minneapolis that has been doing justice work for years. And this moment with the accelerating violence in Minneapolis, especially by ICE, led them to issue a call to faith leaders of all flavors across the country to come to Minneapolis. So I received this on Saturday. And then by the following Thursday, I was in Minneapolis with 1,000 other clergy.
Wow. From around the country or around the state?
From all over the country. I had personally friends from Maine and California and Washington State and Florida who all flew in. And in a way, mirroring the call that Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King issued to Selma to say, this is a national crisis and we need faith voices to bear witness to what is happening and to call attention to people across lots of different perspectives to see and witness and to speak truth to power. And so being, for me, coming down from Brainerd to Minneapolis, it felt like, how could I say no when I have people dropping everything and flying, 2,000 miles or 1,000 miles across the country, leaving their work and their families and their communities to stand at the airport, to stand in the street at 20 below. my folks from the Bay Area that I met that, they're not used to this kind of weather. speaking truth to power and bearing witness is not meant to be easy. So
there was,
so that's kind of how it started. Yeah.
Thanks for that groundwork there, just kind of laying the scene. There was a lot of coverage of the airport filled with clergy. Can you tell us what that experience was like for you?
Yeah. Leading into that moment, the day before, we spent the day together and talked about, we had, trying to organize. They were expecting 200 clergy they were hoping for 200 clergy. And so when 1,000 showed up, they had to pivot. And so we were given multiple options of how to show up for the day. And so the airport was one option. There was another group of clergy that did a pilgrimage from George Floyd Square to the Rene Goode Memorial. There was another group of clergy that went to a church to help them with their mutual aid resources. And so on that Thursday before, we spent time learning about what skills or information was necessary for our particular experience. So before the airport, we gathered and learned about non-cooperative resistance and nonviolent resistance. And we were given the choice of, did we want to be risking arrest, or was that outside of our risk profile, right? And so there were clergy, those who were arrested were planning on the possibility of being arrested. And so those folks were on what we called the red team. And so those of us like me, who I'm a diabetic and I have some other medications, that if detainment lasted more than half a day, it would be a problem for me. And well aware that the folks who are being detained don't have that choice. But for me, knowing that 100 of my colleagues were willing to risk arrest, I felt like I could take a step back and be on the sidelines, still present. And in a lot of the pictures, I'm in the front of the folks on the sidewalk. But we were told that no matter what we chose, because ICE is not operating within the Constitution and the law, and that they had, they worked with the local police and with the airport police. They were aware that we were coming. And so we had good reason to believe that things would go peacefully and that we could count on the local law enforcement, at least, to uphold the law. But they couldn't guarantee that. And they said, we are operating in a completely different atmosphere right now. So we were prepared for, if you do not want to risk arrest, or you are not willing to put yourself in a place where you might get tear gassed or pepper sprayed, as soon as the first disbursement order comes, you need to go. I decided to stay as long as I could, and I stayed until all of the clergy were arrested and until they got serious about, okay, this is over now, you need to leave. But we were there, we tried to help our out-of-state neighbors understand how cold it was going to be. And it was different from a lot of protests in the sense that I'm sure I walked past people I know, but we were so bundled up, I didn't recognize anybody. But what was amazing was to see people coming from labor unions, teachers unions, just everyday citizens, and then clergy, and the number of people that thanked me for being there, who said, we're so excited, we're so happy that the pastors are here. And so the organizers with the unions and the clergy organizers at some point invited all of the clergy into the road. And so there were a couple hundred of us in the road, arms locked, just singing and chanting and just being a presence of bearing witness to what was happening, and calling on the airport to stop cooperating with ICE, calling on Delta and all the other major airlines that are providing deportation flights to stop cooperating and to stand up for what's right and what's moral. And so then at one point they said, okay, if you are not willing to get arrested, you need to get on the sidewalk. And so got on the sidewalk, and then we saw the infiltration of officers. And it was very different from what we were seeing in the conflicts with ICE, that the police were very respectful. They were patient. I wasn't present for after the arrest, but I know that the clergy were processed very quickly and released within an hour or two, received charges of trespass and failure to comply with an officer. But the whole action took maybe an hour and a half or 2 hours. And I think there's something powerful about faith leaders showing up that gets the attention of folks across different spectrums of belief and different perspectives of what's going on. It's if the clergy are showing up and putting their safety on the line, it usually signals that something is really seriously wrong.
Well, I was going to say that you don't often see in modern times, you don't often see clergy in this visible way. And to mm-hmm. some degree, faith has been weaponized and, yes. you know,
yeah.
Amplified the divisions. So yeah. what was the idea, you know, of the clergy that gathered? What did mm-hmm. you guys see as your role in this?
Yeah.
And the church's yeah. role, really?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I know for me as a progressive clergy, for years, I mean, ever since I entered the ministry 11 years ago, it has been very frustrating that conservative and what has become Christian nationalist clergy are the ones that whose voices seem to get the most attention. And we know that there are just as many, if not more, of us who are following in the ways of Christ and other prophets and leaders who believe that it is important to speak out against injustice. And faithful witness is this really important form of resistance that this type of moment really demands a faithful witness. And so one of our goals is really to be truth tellers. And I say, you know, a lot that phrase, like speaking truth to power, that has for centuries, for millennia, been the call for prophets. And so leaning into that prophetic witness, and one of our roles as clergy, prophet, preacher, teacher. And so the prophetic voice of naming evil and sin when you see it, unfortunately, that has been abused by people with really narrow minds and narrow understandings of their faith. And so we are looking to shine a light on this rise of authoritarianism and not let it go silently, and call on people of faith, especially. Like, that can be a really powerful voice. In other times that I have shown up to speak to representatives, they have thanked me for providing a faith voice that isn't aligned with the right, isn't aligned with the GOP, and been appreciative of a more progressive, more open-minded, inclusive, in my opinion, more Christ-like stance. And so, you know, welcoming the immigrant is one of our tenets of our faith. And it just, you know, loving your neighbor, no matter what. It doesn't say loving your citizen neighbor. It doesn't say loving your documented neighbor. Love your neighbor, period.
You know, you use the word progressive to describe yourself.
Yes.
Do you see yes. politics playing a part in the work you do as a minister? Or how would you define
yeah.
that?
That's a really good question. And I actually preached about that a little bit on Sunday. I made the statement that I will never be partisan. I have made a commitment to taking a nonpartisan stance from the pulpit, especially, and in my witness. Now, my personal political affiliation is irrelevant to my work, right? But I will not commit to being non-political, and that I see Jesus as a very political figure who challenged the oppression of Rome. And so stepping into my faith voice with a political lens and taking on political issues is a central part of what I do, and my faith is motivation for that. That politics is the way that we engage as community. And so the way that we are governed, the way that people in power treat our citizens and treat those of us who are disempowered, that's where clergy need to stand up and take a stand. And so when people's rights are being stripped away, when people's families are being torn apart, that's when we need to stand up and say, this is not just a political issue, this is a moral issue, and it's wrong.
We're talking with Reverend Leslie Moody of the First Congregational United Church of Christ in Brainerd. So you described Thursday and Friday in Minneapolis. Let's talk about things changed Saturday. Let's talk about from there in this timeline.
So Saturday, it's interesting. Our action was over. Like, our call that we answered as clergy from across the country ended Friday night. And there were optional things that we could stick around for. But then Saturday morning, we received the word about the murder of Alex Peretti. And devastated. And, you know, my job is not to speculate, but to just speak what I saw. And we were asked to watch the videos of his execution, in my opinion, and to simply say what we saw, and just the heartbreaking view of him protecting a woman that was being pepper sprayed and shoved and getting in between her and an agent, and then being taken down and having his weapon taken from him and then be shot 10 times. I don't know how anyone could hear that, watch that, and not be disturbed and not be infuriated. And I wondered how my colleagues would feel about how the state would feel. Like, we had this very high, joyful, this protest, you know, with over 50,000 people in the streets of Minneapolis protesting and showing solidarity to each other. And then this horrible event on Saturday could have derailed things, I think, and could have really just gutted people's motivations and felt like, oh, it was all for nothing. And instead, what I'm seeing is a doubling down and a more fierce commitment that we're not going to let this go, that resistance like this has to continue and be sustained. And one of the things we know is that authoritarianism and the rise of authoritarianism counts on us becoming exhausted. It counts on us giving up. And so we have to build in networks and systems and solidarity and community that allows us to have a sustained resistance. And I think, you know, there's just been an ongoing call to continuing to call out the injustice that we're seeing. And I think if anything, I think the murder on Saturday just galvanized people. Like, this is why we're speaking up. This is exactly why we're taking to the street.
So no one really knows how to respond to what is happening right now, or how to deal with it. To take care of ourselves in this moment, to take care of our neighbors. And I'm sure people are, you know, as a faith leader, people are coming to you asking for some advice. So, two-pronged question, you know, what are you saying to folks on how to sort of respond in this moment, and how are you taking care of you in this moment?
Yeah. Oh, thank you for that. And you might have to remind me of the second one when I get there. So what am I telling people? One of the things that I took away from my time in Minneapolis is the importance of training. And I have seen, especially locally, because here in Brainerd and in Crow Wing County, the presence of ICE has been pretty much somewhere else. Like, as far as what we, you know, we're not seeing it, we're not experiencing it firsthand. You know, we know that there's been activity in Long Prairie and some other surrounding communities until recently. And the local community, there's a real desire to do something. And some of us have been engaged in some training around how to do constitutional observing, how to do rapid response work, how to build mutual aid networks, how to show up in nonviolent resistance. But there are folks who have not done that training yet and maybe want to, and they just want to do something. And unfortunately, my biggest concern is that they are putting themselves in harm's way unnecessarily, and even more so that their actions may put in harm's way the folks that we are trying to help. And so one of the lessons that I took away from my time in Minneapolis was the importance of responding, not reacting, and taking the time in the moment. And she was the woman that was talking about this, was really talking about in, you know, when you are in a protest or when you are in an action. But I think it applies in a greater way as well, in a more broad way, that you always have time to take at least one breath. Almost always, no matter how urgent or how much of a crisis it feels like you're in the midst of, you can breathe. And that moment of breathing in and out can give you the space to get back into your wiser mind and to respond from a place of reason and thoughtfulness and intention, rather than just a knee-jerked emotional response or reaction. And so I've been encouraging people to take a breath, literally and figuratively, and that if they haven't done constitutional observer training, do a constitutional observer training. Read up about non-cooperative resistance. Read up on nonviolence, and to connect to our local Indivisible chapter has been doing some amazing work around all of those things. And so the other piece that I have to remind myself and others is it's okay to turn off the news once in a while. We need to be informed. We need to know what's going on. But our 24-hour news cycle is not healthy. And it is, especially when you feel helpless, it feeds into that feeling of I can't do anything. The problem is so big. And so it's important to take time to go outside, breathe the fresh air, even if the air hurts your face, and to be in connection with community. And I know you were speaking about the vigil not too long ago, but a lot of those vigils are both, they serve multiple purposes. It is calling attention to what's going on. It is shining a light on, you know, making the folks uncomfortable who are doing injustice. But a lot of it too is bringing community together and seeing, especially in an area like this, you're not alone. You're not crazy. This is a horrible unfolding of events, this rise of authoritarianism. You're not imagining it. And so finding times that you can be with other people and feel like you don't have to have this all figured out. And that another lesson that reminds me of another lesson, so many lessons that came out of that week, that we're building the plane as it flies. And that because of the way this this occupation of ICE in our state, that we cannot count on doing things the way that we've done them before. The resistance has to adapt because they're adapting. And so having both some patience with organizers, there were times when, like with the airport, we didn't have the details until maybe 8 to 12 hours before, as far as where to go, what time to be, you know, I think we knew what time, but and just saying, you know, please be patient, trust that things are being worked on. And it's holding that balance between being patient and intentional and thoughtful and also not doing anything, right? So, we're in murky, murky, swampy waters, and we're all kind of navigating it together without a map. And so things, you know, our leaders, our resistance leaders are doing the best they can, and they're exhausted. And so it's important for all of us to take time to rest and to take turns. You know, I've said it's a marathon, but it's more like a relay race to some degree, that, you know, we have to pass the baton so that we can breathe, and then we can pick that baton up again. But relying on each other and the strength of community is really important.
Well, we hope that you are taking that advice to yourself as well.
Thank you. I do. I try. I do.
That's Reverend Leslie Moody from First Congregational United Church of Christ in Brainerd. You can read and see more about the vigils and coverage of the state of Minnesota with the Department of Homeland Security, bringing in an estimated 3,000 agents. Thanks so much for your time.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Coming up, we've got the latest Up North report that is giving us an update on some of the things we were learning about there. We were learning about the kind of the human side in our news department reporting next. Stay tuned for that. And at 9 o'clock, it's Headwaters with Kari Hedlund.
We receive support from the Adolescent Crisis Response Team. This crisis intervention service is a program of First Call for Help 211, lending support to residents under the age of 18, as well as parental supports when in crisis or experiencing family distress 24/7.
We'd also like to thank Clacko Brewing Company in Grand Rapids, making traditional old world styles of beer and modern classics. Their tap room open Monday through Thursday, 3 to 8, Friday, Saturday, noon to 8, Sunday from noon to 6. Clacko Brewing.
We just heard from Kayla, who said thank you for this interview of an incredibly courageous leader. What a beautiful perspective. Please thank her for us.
For KAXC News, I'm Larissa Donovan with the Up North Report. One day after four people were arrested by a Homeland Security investigations team from El Potro Mexican Restaurant in downtown Brainerd, community members gathered outside in support. Chelsea Perkins was there and has more.
I know it's cold and I know you don't have to be out here, but
we're very concerned.
We want to be out
here.
Yeah. You don't have to, we want to.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. And I will let them know that you guys came out here. And
with those words of thanks, the woman inside El Potro closed the door and stepped back inside. Signs in the windows of the popular downtown restaurant also offer words of thanks for community support and announced the business's indefinite closure. About 40 people stood outside holding candles and a banner that read, "Immigrants and Refugees Welcome."
All throughout Brainerd, I'm gonna let it shine.
Local pastor Leslie Moody said a few words, noting the community showed up on short notice and with little publicity.
Look at the strength that is here. That is amazing. I know that out in Brainerd, in this area, it can be pretty intimidating.
Brainerd residents and El Potro customers Kirsten and Whitney Showstrand brought their 11-year-old son, Seth. Their household has kept close tabs on their state as the ICE surge is underway, and going to the vigil felt like they were making a difference.
And even though this is small, Brainerd is small, and it doesn't mean that it's not strong and we're not doing what we can.
They belong. They're part of us, you know?
It was very inspiring and I really liked it.
Few details have emerged about the arrest beyond those shared in a news release from the Crow Wing County Sheriff's Office, which assisted with the operation. Federal agents reportedly possessed two arrest warrants. However, four people were taken into custody. The reasons are unknown and their identities have not been released. Two requests by KAXC for additional information from Immigration and Customs Enforcement have not been returned as of Wednesday afternoon. Chelsea Perkins, KAXC News.
A Red Leg Nation descendant is facing federal assault charges after his encounter with ICE earlier this month. 20-year-old Jose Ramirez was taken into ICE custody on January 8th in an incident captured on video in Minneapolis, where it appeared he was forcibly removed from a vehicle. Ramirez is accused of hitting an immigration agent during his detention. ICT reports Ramirez's case is being supported by the Native American Rights Fund, among others, who say he is a victim of retaliation following his unlawful assault and detention. A spokesperson from his defense say ICE agents arrived at his home Friday with guns drawn, demanding he exit the premises. After receiving no response, officers unplugged the home's front cameras and left. Agents returned Saturday with additional threats of arrest. Ramirez voluntarily turned himself into authorities Monday and was released the same day. Red Lake Chairman Daryl Seeke recently penned a letter to Minnesota's Democratic delegation urging they do all in their power to end Operation Metro Surge. He says of the 8,000 Red Lake band members who live in the Twin Cities Metro, three have so far been illegally detained. Seeke alleges these members were detained on the basis of their skin color while not carrying their tribal ID cards. Earlier this month, the Red Lake Tribal Council unanimously passed a resolution barring ICE agents from entering the reservation without a judicial warrant. The Itasca County Sheriff's Office is joining Cass County in abandoning its agreement with ICE. Megan Buffington has more.
Both counties signed 287G agreements in February. They chose the task force model, meaning local authorities could assist in enforcing civil immigration laws. But Attorney General Keith Ellison opined in December that those agreements need county board approval. Cass County officials say their agreement is null and void. Itasca County Sheriff Joe Dasovich says he's in the same position.
Those are the only ones we deal with. They're the ones with ICE detainers that have committed crime here in Itasca County. So I don't need the 287G.
Dasovich says ICE hasn't been in the county.
I would hope that if they came to town, they would have some professional courtesy and give me a call and we can see what needs to be done.
Both counties are still listed under ICE's participating agencies as of Wednesday. Megan Buffington, KAXE News.
That's it for the Up North Report. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Larissa Donovan, telling the stories of northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report is sponsored by Woodland Bank, with locations in Grand Rapids, Cohasset, Hill City, and Deer River. Dedicated to serving the financial needs of the community and their customers. More info at woodland.bank.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Layla Faldil. Bruce Springsteen released some new music on Wednesday, a protest against immigration agents' violence in Minneapolis. The song is called Streets of Minneapolis. It name checks multiple people in the Trump administration, and it pays tribute to Renee Macklin Good and Alex Preddy, the two U.S. citizens killed by federal agents in Minneapolis this month. NPR music reporter Isabella Gomez Sarmiento joins us now to break this song down. Hi, Isabella.
Good morning, Layla.
Good morning. So this is a very direct political statement. What's in the song?
Yeah, this is a song condemning ICE's actions and the Trump administration's culpability. Springsteen wastes no time making that point. In the very first verse, this is how he describes what's happened in Minneapolis.
King Trump's private army from the DHS, guns belted to their coats, came to Minneapolis to enforce the law, or so their story goes.
He goes on to paint a picture of the clashes between armed forces and protesters on the snow-filled streets. He names and describes the deaths of both Renee Macklin Good and Alex Preddy, and he points out how eyewitness videos of their deaths contradict what some government officials have said.
Their claim was self-defense, sir. Just don't believe your eyes. It's our blood and bones and these whistles and phones against Miller and Noam's dirty lies.
So he's calling out Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem and White House Deputy Chief of Staff Stephen Miller for how they've responded. Secretary Noem initially described the actions of both victims as equivalent to domestic terrorism, and she and Miller have stated the officers were acting in self-defense. In the case of Alex Preddy, an internal government review of his shooting now contradicts some of Noem's initial comments.
Yeah, and so do the videos that we've seen so far and verified. Mm-hmm. Now, this is an unfolding situation. Alex Preddy was just killed on Saturday, so Springsteen must have written this really quickly.
Yeah, you know, on a post on social media, he said he wrote this on Saturday, on that very day. And something that's notable here is that throughout the song, Springsteen is putting himself on the streets alongside the protesters. Not just in the scenery that he's describing, but also how it sounds. There's a portion of the song where you hear actual chants on the street.
Mm. In our chance of ICE out now, our city's heart and soul persists. Through broken glass and bloody tears.
So on social media, he dedicated this song to the memory of Renee Macklin Good and Alex Preddy, to the city of Minneapolis, and quote, our innocent immigrant neighbors.
Now, Springsteen has been making political music for his whole career. How does this song fit into that?
Yeah, you know, you're absolutely right. Springsteen has clashed with politicians before. And when it comes to Trump in particular, he's been a very vocal critic for years. But he's become more and more explicit recently. Last spring, he released an EP of live recordings, which included onstage comments calling the administration, quote, corrupt, incompetent, and treasonous. During a performance in New Jersey earlier this month, he called for ICE to get out of Minneapolis. So, you know, it's like Streets of Minneapolis sounds like a classic Springsteen rock and roll song. He has a full band, his voice is really raw, and it's just a very angry song.
That's NPR music reporter Isabella Gomez Sarmiento. Thank you for your reporting.
Thank you.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Leila Fadel.
And I'm Steve Inskeep.
It's 8:45. Thanks for tuning in. This is the Thursday morning show on this January 29th.
We receive support from the Lake Country Journal, a lifestyle magazine since 1997. A local publication sharing stories from the heart of Minnesota about the places to go, things to do, and people to know in Lake Country. LakeCountryJournal.com.
Thanks also goes out to Hot Tubs of Northern Minnesota on Middle School Avenue in Bemidji, with hot tubs, pool tables, saunas, and more. HotTubsMN.com.
Grand Rapids Tax Aid is offering free tax preparation February 2nd through April 12th by appointment only. Call 218-245-9202 for more information.
Brainerd Nordic Ski Club has their Lumberjack Jaunt this Sunday at Northland Arboretum. You can choose from skate or classic, distances of 6 or 16 kilometers. BrainerdNordicSkiClub.com.
It is going to be mostly cold, mostly cloudy today, 0 to 7 degrees with some chance for flurries or snow. Again, I'm putting it out there into the universe. I sure would like a real snowstorm here, like everywhere else is getting. Tonight, partly cloudy, lows 12 below to 20 below. Wind chill value is 20 to 30 below zero. And looking ahead to Friday, sun's coming back out, high 0 to 9. Saturday, sunny, highs in the mid to upper teens. We receive support from Sanford Bemidji Heart and Vascular Center, expanding cardiology services to our region. More at sanfordhealth.org.
Music now. Car, you have picked this out. It's a funk and soul band.
L. Michaels Affair. So it's led by Leon Michaels, who is in Daptone Record label, and they do just a really great, mostly instrumental, but they've got some really great vocalists partnered with them throughout this whole album, 24 Hour Sports. The song is Carry Me Away, which features Nora Jones. That is L. Michael's Affair with Nora Jones, Carry Me Away. It is Thursday morning. We're almost done with this week here. I'm Kari Hedlund here with Heidi.
Are we? I don't know if you could say that yet.
You know, sort of last stretches anyway.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I told my kids when they woke up this morning.
Kari, I bet, I'm going to just pivot here.
Oh, let's see the pivot.
You ever use Bisquick?
Not really. Like for pancakes?
Generally.
Biscuits?
Yeah.
Not really.
Okay.
Why?
My grandma used it all the time.
Okay.
My grandma's pancakes were my favorite that she made. And she just used Bisquick, but she made it in a blender and she poured it, which is sort of smart.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
But it also, she didn't blend it like, because you overblending makes terrible pancakes.
Yes.
Right?
You're not supposed to overmix. Yeah.
So that's been my problem for about 25 years.
What happens when you over...
They are chewy and rubbery and really not good. So, I don't know. A couple months ago, I just was like, I just thought, I'm going to get some Bisquick. I can try the pancakes that way. And which I did. And they were good. They were very fluffy. They were like my grandmother's. You know, I like thin. I don't like fluffy as much. I like more of almost like a crepe or something.
Swedish pancake.
But I did I felt like I was like really old school because I made a recipe this week from the back of the box of Bisquick.
Okay, what was the recipe?
Which is kind of not cool, right?
Sometimes they got it.
Are you ready for it? You're going to judge me. I'm trying to see your eyes here.
No, let's hear it.
Cheeseburger pie.
Ooh, I can get down with a cheeseburger pie. And so then were there biscuits on, like, was it a biscuit top?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But I will say, all they had was hamburger on the bottom and maybe some onions. And I loaded it with vegetables,
well,
too.
Yeah.
You know, it had nothing. Cheese.
So was there a bottom crust, too, or was the crust just on top?
Yeah, it was browned hamburger with some onions and then a layer of cheese, and then you pour the thing over it, and it makes this whole... You know, it's not like it didn't puff up like a giant biscuit. It was within it.
Ooh, okay. So it kind of sunk down a little bit?
Yeah.
Yum. Would you do it again?
Yeah.
But
it feels it's a little strange, I guess.
I did just watch that Friends episode where Phoebe is trying to track down the recipe of the chocolate chip cookies.
Yeah.
And it's Nestle.
Yes. I thought you were going to quote Friends because of Pivot. But no.
Pivot.
Okay.
A couple of them there. Gosh. Three Friends references in one
bing,
morning show.
Yeah. Bing,
happening?
Bing, bing. There we go.
On a cookie note, I've never owned a blender.
Mm. I hate blenders.
Same.
You need to spend like $500 in order to have a good blender.
The cleaning of it, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, gross.
I've never had a desire to have one. Well, my father-in-law started down this smoothie path this last
Everyone
year.
Everyone does at some point, don't they?
And we had gotten him a blender, which he ended up not liking. So we took that blender.
Yeah.
So I have my first.
Want not.
I have my first blender that I've ever owned in my life. And
is it like a $10 one?
No, it's a nice one.
Yeah.
And I used it for the first time just last week. And I was like, this is why people like blenders.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Yeah. I have sort of feel like I have too many appliances.
Sure.
Otherwise, I think I would invest in one. I do for years and years and years. I didn't have a food processor.
Yeah.
You know, I have a KitchenAid mixer and I would just. Honestly, whenever something said use a food processor, I would practically avoid that recipe because it was just like, that's not going to work. Or I would try to do it by hand, which didn't quite
terrible.
Do it.
Yeah. Immersion blenders don't do it fully.
Yeah. Let's not even talk about immersion blenders. I've tried these things because I kind of don't want to spend too much. I don't want to take up much space. And anyway, yeah.
I do own an immersion blender. However, I feel like there are so few recipes where that actually feels like that's what I need.
Why do they always get kind of hot and kind of smell like gears are grinding? Things like that.
That happened
Why?
I don't know. I finally had to get a new KitchenAid mixer.
Yeah.
Because the motor was like smoking and smelled. And it was hot. Yep. If I'd ever make monster cookies, forget it. Couldn't even do it.
We needed this cooking talk today, I think. So yeah, maybe I bring it in. It is. I mean, it makes some sense, right, with the Bisquick and a cheeseburger pie to just need some comfort food during, during the winter. You know, sometimes that's what you need. But yeah, I put some, I had like spinach and arugula, and I put that in there, and I had a,
oh, how was the arugula mushrooms in there?
Good. And mushrooms. And so I after I browned the hamburger, I did that with some more onions and some peppers and the greens. And then I put the layer of that on top of the, and that was good. I think that added a lot to it.
I've been adding lentils to my beef because as a family, we are sort of going beyond a pound being able to be sufficient for a meal.
You don't want to buy 2 pounds.
No, that's too much. Like it's, and then I use 1.5 and then I end up with 0.5 pound in my freezer and it's just an awkward amount.
Okay.
So I've been adding in some red lentils to the beef, like in taco meat. Mm. Holy, I love it. Mm. It's been a very fun, how old am I that adding lentils has become fun?
Good times, Kari. So it's really fun. good times.
Hey, we were talking about books earlier. Mm-hmm. And wait, I have one more food story before we go to these texts about books. Ham radio, one of your ham radios, you guys talked about community cookbooks, right?
Mm-hmm.
We just took a gamble on one. Mm-hmm. It was a church cookbook from Faith Lutheran Church in this one I think was from Montana from the 70s. It's got some of my favorite recipes in there, some of my favorite bread recipes, monster cookie recipes. I found this sour cream cornbread.
Mm.
And so Kyle made it this last week with our chili. You know, it's always a gamble. You don't know. It could be, things could be wrong. It could be a terrible recipe. This was one of the best cornbreads I think I've ever had.
It was a little bit of a tang and more moist.
Yeah, more moist. And we used Greek yogurt instead of sour cream, but it's still so good 5 days later. Normally cornbread is kaput by this time, right?
Yeah.
Or it's going into croutons or something.
But right, right.
Yeah.
Ends up as something else.
Right.
We had been talking a little bit of books and we did get some other texts that came in. We heard from Jan saying, I'm enjoying the Lori King series about Mary Russell and Sherlock Holmes. The first is The Beekeeper's Apprentice. Mary starts as a mentee to the retired Sherlock who has been keeping bees. Of course, mystery ensues, as does character development and relationships.
We also heard from Steve who said he finished Jeanette McCurdy's autobiography earlier this month. It was a hard listen and recognized the sorts of things she wrote about. Not cheery, but meaningful nonetheless. There was hope at the end. That memoir has been on my list, Steve. I have been waiting for that for, I feel like, years on my Libby app. So maybe it's still coming to me. We'll see. We'd love to hear from you on what you're reading or what you've been cooking. Text us 218-326-1234. Lisa said, regarding pancakes, what's for breakfast sponsor Homestead Mills Wild Rice Pancake Mix is amazing. I follow the recipe on the back, but leave out the lemon juice. What? It calls for lemon juice? Mm. I've only gotten the Country Blend cereal when I was on What's for Breakfast.
Recipes sometimes have lemon juice in there.
Never had that before.
Mm-hmm.
You're listening.
You've got Headwaters coming up.
Yep, we've got Headwaters coming up. But first, we want to thank Tales Out. Heidi's miming to me over there across
What are we going to start with, Kari?
Oh, that's what you're trying to get at. I see. Let us start with a new one from Monrovia. We're going to listen to Pray the Devil Back to Hell in a little bit here. But first, we want to thank Dale's Auto Body for their support, serving the auto body needs of Grand Rapids and surrounding communities since 1984, performing auto body and collision repair, as well as auto glass replacement, dedicated to getting you back on the road after an accident. More information at dalesautobodyinc.com. Also want to thank Harmony Food Co-op in Bemidji, partnering with local farms for over 2 decades to provide fresh and local foods, promoting sustainability through local buying, open daily from 8 to 8, more at harmonyfoods.coop, also on Facebook.
Big thank you goes out to all of our volunteers who put together great programming for us. That includes John Henningsgaard, who will be our host today at 1 o'clock for On the River. Tonight at 7, it is DJ Lake Poseidon.
had some, I had a call from a listener yesterday after I was on Headwaters in the Morning who sent me a request of a song that, you know, sort of tying in some songs from the past that have a lot of meaning